Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV Podcast 505.
Should we play our game again?
No.
Okay.
I've got no better guesses.
If you keep answering the same place,
eventually
you could get it right. Unless it's one we've already passed.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But no, not until we get to 520, which I'm almost positive is a pretty standard Arizona. Or is it West Bend? Or not West Bend, Bend, Oregon. I don't know. We're going to have to just wait. Somebody will chime in and let us know. 520. Or am I thinking a 620? Anyway, we'll worry about it when we get there. Welcome in, everyone. This is our live Tuesday night podcast. Right off the bat, I think what I can officially announce or talk about is the fact that we're going to have at some point here, once she gets settled in, she's been traveling all day, like a lot of our competitors, we are going to have Emily Weatherman join us on the show tonight. Clearly one of the biggest stories among the Dynamic Disc Open weekend that just unfolded.
Yeah, she popped up a few weeks ago and there was some talk about her, but then she was quiet for a few weeks and now she's back on the, well, not that she left the scene, but she's back in the spotlight.
Yes, so it'll be great to catch up with her and have a conversation with her and hopefully get to know her a little bit more. Many of you saw her at some time or another on this weekend's broadcast, whether it was a lead card or it was on the chase card on the final day, either way. And of course, I know many of you already know her and or have seen her at tournaments. She's been in the game for a while. However, you know, really stepping up onto the biggest stage in the brightest spotlight here this last weekend. I'd like to say this is what we feel like is some of the biggest exposure that we've had. So also, we may or may not hear from Calvin Heimberg. Him and I exchanged a few messages. I know he said he was also just getting into town, a long day of travel. I think he's on another podcast as we speak right now, so we didn't formalize anything. And if it works out that we can have him pop in and doesn't conflict with whenever Emily pops in, then we'll see if we can make it all work. So that's where we're at. And with that, I guess we could probably start off by talking about some of the stuff on over at the Dynamic Disc Open this weekend. Let's start with the MPO action.
Yeah, the MPO.
And bring it to you.
MPO action at the Dynamic Discs Open. As Terry said, Calvin Heimberg kind of walks this one in the final round. He got out to a really hot start going on the final round, getting the first seven birdies. And then from there, kind of put it on cruise control. It didn't feel like anybody could catch him. Gannon Burr was chasing. Gavin Rathbun started out with a seven, which really kind of hurt his chances right away, but still made a good run in the long run. But ultimately, Kelvin gets his first win in over a year.
Which that in itself obviously sounds a little bit crazy, knowing the season that he had last year, knowing how much we talk about him, obviously right there for, you know, player of the year and making those arguments, him and Isaac Robinson and everything else. But to hear that he's gone more than a full year, that it took him that long is we know how competitive it is in the MPO division, but at the same time, we also know how Kelvin has consistently stood above the rest in his consistency. So to hear that it feels a little bit wild.
But it does feel a little bit wild, but as you said, with the way players seem to pop off, different players, whether it's Gannon or AB or Presnell recently or Isaac Robinson, it's not surprising. I don't expect Kelvin to go a year between wins, but it's not going to shock me if we don't see him get another 3 or 4 win season, that maybe he only gets one, maybe two a year if he's lucky for the next couple of years while he's still young, so to speak. So it's going to be an interesting few years. And Kelvin, we knew he was going to get one at some point because, again, he's been hanging out at the top and he was able to pull this one in. So Kelvin Heimberg shooting a 28 under par, besting Gannon Burr by 3 strokes. And then Gavin Rathbun, who a name we've been mentioning quite a bit this year. Mm-hmm. It feels like every other event that guy pops off. And Gavin just maybe my favorite player because of how quick that son of a gun throws. He doesn't do. I think he stands there. He knows his game. He knows what he's practiced. He probably just kind of feels the wind as he's waiting to throw, gets up and throws. It's amazing. I love it. I absolutely love how fast he plays. Fourth place, another young name that we've been talking a lot about, and that's Joseph Anderson, Joey Buckets. He took fourth place, shooting 22 under par. He lit up the back nine.
Yeah, and obviously overall that entire mm-hmm. round. What a way to close out the event. Like you were just saying, lighting up the back nine, getting, what is that, 8 in a row?
Yeah.
Yeah, getting 8 in a row to finish it out. But then overall, the 13 under, unofficially rated a 1084
round. And I believe round. A course record out
yes,
there.
Yes, yes. So then became the course record. Obviously, Heimberg right behind him with his 12 under. Heimberg had just as many birdies, getting most of the work done on the front. But ultimately, had the single bogey and that led him to the 12 under. But yeah, Joey Buckets, how many spots moving up 13 spots on that final day is certainly impressive as well. And just edging out our guest and our major champion from last weekend in Andrew Presnell.
A good comeback week. A lot of people would maybe expect him not to have this kind of week coming down from a major high, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And he came out and performed and on a course that maybe he's not necessarily picked for. This is a big, long, wide open course. His game is not necessarily distance in the field, although for most of our average players, he throws far enough. Mm-hmm. But compared to some of our other power players, that's not what he's known for. But he comes out and shoots a 21 under par, tying Ricky Wysocki. Ricky had just a horrendous back nine compared to some of the other guys. I believe he shot to look like about even. No, maybe one down on that back nine. Well, Joey Buckets is shooting 8 down on the back nine. So Ricky fell a little bit there, falling 4 spots on that final round. Chris Dickerson, another guy who hasn't seemed to miss the top 10 this year, coming in 7th place. 8th place, Gavin Babcock, not a name we've talked about too much this year. 9th place, Isaac Robinson. Isaac jumping up 8 spots on that final round to get to a tie for 9th with Mason Marshbanks. That's your top 10, Terry.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting takeaways that you can find buried within there. As you just said, a couple of the names that we're not necessarily used to seeing. And it's fair to say one of the bigger stories is that Ricky out in front is generally so dominant, and that's not really a secret. There's a stat, I think it was 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 8, something along those lines, where he's been out in front going into a final round when he's had the lead and then goes on and holds on to it. And we say it all the time in the broadcast booth for that exact reason. You don't want Ricky to get too far out in front of you because
then you'll never catch him.
Yeah, he just feels like you'll never catch him and he can just continue to roll on. And running into the problems that he had out there during that final round was really interesting to see. Now, I mm-hmm. only heard some of the calls and some of the things that were being said as I was out actually on Chase Card this weekend, watching along, but then listening to the booth the entire time. And so I'm trying to pay attention to everything that's going on my card, on the Chase Card that I'm reporting on. But yeah, Ricky just with that slow start. And then obviously part of that conversation can continue to say, you know, was there a factor of Ricky playing up to either his standards or playing well? And was there also just a component of Kelvin being unstoppable. Like,
I think,
you know,
I think that some of it, you know, trying to chase down Kelvin Heimberg is no easy thing. I mean, you just talked about how tough Ricky is. Kelvin can't be that much harder to do at these events. I know Kelvin has had an issue with the final round at some of these events, some of the majors where he is kind of tailed off. But Ricky, ultimately, even early on, two OBs in the front nine doesn't help, and then a hazard and two more OBs. So ultimately, four OBs and a hazard on that final nine, that final 18 really just killed him and just didn't let him catch up. But you're right, trying to probably push and take down and catch Kelvin, not an easy thing. And you can easily understand how someone like Ricky, who we've said before, does he care about second place? Does he care if he takes second versus fifth? Probably a little bit, considering he has talked about consistency so much and how well he plays. But I still think he falls those few spots chasing that win more often than not.
Yeah. And there's this, you know, all or nothing mentality. And I don't know if there's much else to say other than a few select players like Ricky at this point do seemingly only care about that win. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. They don't have anything else. You know, Rick doesn't have other things to prove necessarily in terms of taking second at every single event this year. Yes, of course, that would be in his back pocket in terms of the consistency. But the win is what really matters to him the most, winning at all costs. And nothing for nothing, I didn't see the action. I don't think any of you did either. You have to assume that's where Paul McBeth is, in the sense of how he was closing out this round as well. Because at one point, he was, what, 8 under through 12? Mm-hmm. Or 8 under through 14, or maybe even more than that. What is that math there?
He was 10 down through 14.
Are you sure you're not on the... I was going to say, is this the first round?
No, this is...
Okay, this is the last round. Okay, because I thought he blew up on the final hole.
He blew up on the two final holes, or two of the three final holes.
Okay.
16, where he missed the island. And then
must have went after the putt.
Probably went after the putt
because it was all or nothing at that point. Yep. And then I have any idea, honestly, that happened on 18. I don't know. Did they show it?
He went for the. I don't think they showed it. I don't think they had a camera on him. My understanding is he went for the island on eagle every single round.
Okay.
So,
it's just so crazy to think about how good that round was going. I'm sorry, did you say he was 10 through 14?
Yeah, he was 10 through 14 with an eagle.
So you even finished with a couple of pars and you finish out with a 10 under. Mm-hmm. That's a solid round. You're moving up. I mean, just think moving up. I know this is what it could have, should have stuff.
Six spots.
Take off six strokes off his score.
He would have been tied for 11th.
And instead finished in 22nd, 23rd.
Yeah, there was no chance. There was no chance he was going to get the win on that final round.
Of course.
But he could have broke into the top 10. But ultimately, if you look at his final holes, hole 18, round one, he takes an 8. Round two, he gets a birdie. And round three, he gets a 9. I think he went for, I don't know if he didn't go for the eagle. Maybe the wind wasn't right on the final round because...
We're out of position. There's some places on that hole where no matter what you do, you can't go for that eagle.
Can't get the eagle. Yeah.
So I'm not sure as to what happened there. But that was clearly an all or nothing output. That was kind of my whole point, is he didn't care if he shot a 4 under or an 8 under, a 10 under. He wanted that 12 or 13 or 15 or whatever he could have possibly gotten to. He's at a point in his career where he can do that, where plenty of other people, I think, who are in that stage are thinking, man, just finish out relatively strong. Maybe I have this hiccup on 16. I'll see what I can do to, you know, finish out solid on the last hole or two, and I'm going to move up I'm going to move up and earn a couple extra grand.
Yeah, I mean, think about someone like...
He's not as concerned about that.
Gavin Rathbun, Joseph Anderson, Joey Buckets, Andrew Presnell probably even at this point still, now that he's back on the elite team now, so that's going to help, but those three guys right there, and probably Gavin Babcock in eighth, all would love to move... They're happy when they get the top 10. If they can get to top 5, that's great. And of course, like you said, of course they're pushing for the win, but I mean, they're probably not, you know, risking an eagle on 18 if they feel it could drop them down four spots.
Yeah.
That's just, it's just not in them. Whereas if someone like Gannon Burr, Calvin Heimberg, Ricky, Chris Dickerson, they would probably all take that risk because they have, like you said, they have nothing to prove. They've got the wins in them. They can just keep going. And that's one of the reasons those guys can put the pressure on some of these other guys. They know these other guys know that, guess what? Calvin's got nothing to lose. If he takes second, first, or fifth, he's not going to crack a smile either way.
Yeah. One of the things that I know you touched on it, and he specifically called it out. Presnell posted on his Instagram saying, "No major hangover for me this week in Emporia. I was able to snag a top five finish at the Dynamic Disc Open, my best Elite Series finish of the year. Had a good time hanging out with friends all week and made for a fun getaway trip for Peyton and I. She was a great caddy for me." And then he said, "Big news coming this week. What do you think it is?"
I'm guessing they're going to announce his Elite Series Tour disc. If I had to take a guess,
I mean, if we're talking presidential races, there might be some kind of
maybe a vice president announcement
or a big platform, an official platform statement, maybe a trip to court. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going on in the, you know, presidential realm these days. Mm-hmm. For lots of different people.
You don't know. We don't know.
Maybe he's going to be showing up for some debate somewhere in some capacity. I don't know. But anyway, great to see him. Like you said, easy probably after such a big win in everything that he went through over the last week to then come back and, you know, be able to focus up on a course that necessarily isn't suited very well for his game. It was very impressive. So you want to talk about trending in the right direction. I think it's certainly fair to say that he's all part of that. And then it's, you know, there's only so much you can say about it. But yes, a lot, as you just said, you enjoy watching Gavin play, as have I for many years. There's something to be said about him. And then on the FPO side, in a somewhat similar stance, him and Lisa Fakus, both with either non-major manufacturers or an open bag philosophy. And the parallel there is actually kind of interesting, that both of them having really good weekends at this particular event. And that is a continued conversation piece is, hey, they're not sponsored. Will they be looking for a sponsor? Is that a priority? Will it happen mid-season? Those are all things that are still unknown. But
I could see Gavin picking up a sponsor mid-season. I don't know about Lisa, just because Lisa went into this season and I think she had maybe some opportunities and didn't take them. Gavin, I believe, was maybe unsure of how his season was going. I mean, if someone, money talks, if someone throws either of them the right opportunity, I think they take it. But
yeah, so that's what we saw. And it'll be interesting to see if that becomes any kind of conversation piece for Gavin moving forward or not.
Some other stories, particularly on the final round. Ezra Robinson, again, having a very rough final round, dropping eight places. He was in third place. Unfortunately, he just has this continued knack the last few weeks of playing poorly that final round. I don't know if it's the pressure. I don't know if it's the pressure he's putting on himself, external pressures, what it is. But unfortunately, he just can't seem to lock down that final round. Chris Clemens earlier in the weekend getting the ace on 16, awesome shot. Anthony Barella kind of middling at the event, ends up taking 14th. Just, you know, not quite where he would have wanted to be on this, but we're kind of going into a series of events that might favor him over on the West Coast. We'll see.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting to say, like, wow, Anthony Barella, who has had so much success this year, to say, man, he really had an off tournament. Whereas you rewind a year or two ago and you're like 14th, you're like, okay, yeah, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's not overly shocking in one way or another. And you're thinking, no big deal. But with the season that Barella has started off with, yes, it almost felt like a little bit of a shock to see that he, you know, had this 14th place finish. But I don't think anybody has to be concerned or anything of that nature.
No.
But yeah, the last two weekends, he's gone 10th place and 14th. And now we'll see what he can do when he picks things back up at an OTB Open. All right. Yeah, that's it on the MPO side. One other thing of note that is definitely was interesting, and I wonder if I can find it very quickly, was the fact that we saw Cole Radalin
Oh, ghost. He ghosted. Hole 16.
Yeah, Cole Radalyn opted to throw his tee shot on 16, presumably left the disc there, unless he had a friend or a card mate eventually pick it up. I don't think that was his concern. But throws the tee shot on 16 and then essentially picks up his bag and walks off. He
pieces out.
This was driven, my understanding from his post, was this was largely driven, A, he obviously wasn't playing that well all weekend, but this was also then driven by the fact that the FPO playoff was taking place as well. And that was, we'll say, part of his, well, I'll just read it. I guess I don't want to interject at all. There's no reason to, because he wrote what he wrote. He said, DNF from DDO. He also said, got to do what you got to do. LOL. The FPO finished their round and had to run a playoff, which stopped our card for about 45 minutes. Which that in itself kind of confuses me. That's not the point. I decided to walk off because the last three holes didn't matter anyway. People always say they are proud of never dropped out, but I did it for logistical and practical reasons. This is definitely my first time doing so without being sick or injured. My play was really poor. However, I saw potential that just needs to be refined. Champions Landing has always been a tough track for me, but it won't stop me from coming back and giving it my all. I apologize to all my family and friends that I disappointed with this decision. However, my goals are set higher. Not proud of myself at all for throwing in the towel too early in round two. I gave up and let myself spiral in the dark mental space. I'm excited to get home, regroup for the West Coast swing. Miss you, Oregon. Of course, this has been met with mixed reaction.
Yeah, there are right? There are some people who feel that if he's not in a good mental state, let him be. Walk off the course. Why continue to put extra stress on yourself? There are some people that say, hey, you're not injured. It's your job to play disc golf. You know, you are representing a manufacturer. Multiple sponsor, and you walk off the course healthy because you're not playing well. What's your deal? So there's two or three, or I'm sure there's multiple takes on it. I just looked at some of his rounds. Round one, he finished up four straight bogeys, 15 through 18. Round two, 16, 17, and 18, he went double, single, single. And then, of course, round three, obviously, he kind of he bailed on the round, so he went plus four on each of them.
Here's what, if I read that post correctly, or should I say interpret it correctly, maybe more importantly than reading it, I don't believe that he does that if that FPO playoff doesn't jump in front of him.
True. I think.
And does that change the dynamic, pardon the pun, or the situation at all? You know, do you assume that he plays out the round? He gets to hole 16. It's presumably clear he's ready to throw. He throws and plays 16, 17, and 18.
Probably. The Instagram post he showed, he drove the hole and then walked off. So did he drive after the playoff went through?
That would be my understanding.
Or did he drive and then they're like, you know.
That's a good question. Because, as in, did they drive and then all of a sudden they walked up?
No, well, I mean, he knew he was walking off at that point. But did they say, hey, you guys can drive, but we're going to come through? That wouldn't make sense to have if you had the opportunity to leave your discs there. So he probably, what I don't understand is why wait for the 45 minutes?
Yeah, that does.
And then
I'm missing here.
Then walk off. Like, you're sitting there. Maybe it just all builds up. And finally, he's kind of like, no, I don't want to do this. I'm out of here. I don't understand. There's got to be something more to it as to why you'd even throw a disc unless you're donating it. And you're just like, hey, you can have this disc or I want to throw it and see if I get in on the island.
Or see if I ace.
That's true, because he did kind of run at it. And so if you listen to that video, you hear someone say, yeah, that would be crazy. Get in. Because they all knew he was leaving. Mm-hmm. Everyone on the card knew he was leaving.
Do you? I mean, I know he says he's committed to leaving. You ace that. Do you not? You don't retrieve it and you just continue to walk off.
That would be kind of, I'll say, I don't agree with the decision, but that would be kind of a ballsy move right there. That just throw it, smash it, and then see ya. Somebody donate the disc to somebody.
I don't know, yeah. But at any rate, it was definitely met with mixed reaction. We certainly understand mental health, mental stability, all of those things. Someone saying on the board right now, specifically, like, it's okay if you're struggling mentally, but to make that video making a joke of it seemed very disrespectful and distasteful.
I can see that take.
And I think there are probably 20 different ways to look at this, and I'm not sure any one is more right than the next. People are going to come into this with a different perception, and they're going to leave with a slightly different angle to it. And I completely understand that. So it was something interesting of note. There's no doubt about that. And and then of course we got to see how he gets logged. It's currently listed as an 888. Does that affect his rating? Because he's officially withdrawing in order to preserve, to preserve his rating, but he's withdrawing. But is he telling people? Is he not? And then what's the reasoning? And then making it public. I'd be interested to talk to the rules.
It doesn't. My understanding is that it doesn't matter if you withdraw and don't tell the TD in the middle of the event, in the middle of the round, like just walking off.
I would have to look it up.
Correct. The only way you get an 888 is if you knowingly do it to preserve your rating.
Let's not postulate on rules.
We'll figure it out later.
More importantly, we have one of our biggest stories, as we just said, from the weekend, and it looks like she is just about ready, I believe. I think she can hopefully hear us and is probably ready to go. And with that, our very special guest making her Smashbox TV debut is one Emily Weatherman. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are y'all?
I'm fantastic. Very good. I met you and talked to you this weekend. I'm Terry. This is Johnny V, who hasn't been out on the scene in a while, but this is Johnny V. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So first, let's get it right out of the way. Congratulations on one heck of a weekend. We opened the show by saying you were clearly one of the big stories of the weekend. We have our winners and we have playoffs and, we have all this stuff. But in addition to all of that, seeing you perform, getting on, into a tie for the lead, being on a lead card, being on a chase card, how does that all feel, 2 days after you're done? How does that feel now, the weekend?
Honestly, it feels right. Like, I felt like I belonged there. For the longest time, I went through like a lot of self-doubt coming into this. But for the first time, I think it just finally felt like I was in the right place.
Now, a couple of the basics. I know we talked about some of it on the broadcast and whatnot, but you're 18 years old. And this is the first we're seeing of you to this scale. I know that you and your dad and your family played disc golf, and that's kind of where you got into it. But did you have idols or outside influences or people, golfers on the men or women's side that you've kind of looked up to or aspired to be like or learn anything from their games?
So growing up, I would always play with my dad. My dad was great. He taught me a lot of what I know. I also played with a guy named Joe Cortez who lived in my hometown. We would always play doubles events together. And I would say a lot of my putting comes from him. I learned my putting from him. He was a great putter. Things have changed since then in my putting routine and all that. But he was definitely one of them. And then outside of like my hometown, honestly, I just like to watch the FPO. I don't think I really had a specific FPO player that I wanted to be like. I just wanted to be there and experience it as well.
Now, I think it's fair to draw a few similarities from you to some of our other top performing FPO players. You know, there's some obvious ones when you look at your stature and you see, and then you look at home state, the father daughter playing like that sounds like, you know, we could close our eyes and that sounds like Paige Pierce in a lot of ways, right? In terms of some similarities, Paige Hsu, who I know you admire and look up to as well.
Yes.
Stature. All those types of things, dad, daughter playing, again, kind of similar. When you think about the tour and you think about playing and being a professional disc golfer, is that your number one goal right now in terms of your life and your path that you're on?
Yeah, I would say so. I really live life as like, enjoy every moment of it, or every moment that you can. And so as long as I'm having fun with it and I'm still able to do it, this is what I want to do.
Now, I'm looking at your upcoming events. You've got Santa Cruz coming up this weekend.
Yes.
And then you're doing OTB. You're not going up to Portland, is that correct? And instead, taking a few weeks off and next is the Majestic. What's going on with Portland and the Beaver State area? And then maybe the end of the year as well, where we don't see you signed up yet.
Yeah, so I don't have a tour card, so I have to do the Monday qualifiers. And so that's what I'm planning on doing for Portland and Beaver State. I have like a whole list of tournaments in my notes. I couldn't tell you the order of any of them or which ones they are, of where I'm playing Monday qualifiers or where I may be on the wait list for them. But I am trying to go to as many as possible.
Yeah, a couple follow-ups to that. And again, we see you show up, have this performance, and then everyone probably immediately says, what do you mean she can't get into other events? Well, you haven't, you know, been around, so to speak, and earned your way into it. Does this top finish this weekend? Does that doesn't necessarily secure anything for the rest of the year, does it? What is it? Is there a way to get into those other events later in the year without having to do Monday qualifiers? Is that still possible? I don't know how that all works.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I'm still also trying to figure that out, trying to figure out all the different things I could do to get in. I guess I'm hoping that this top three finish helps with that, or maybe some of the tournaments that are coming up might help if I play well in them as well. But as of right now, I don't think that helps anything.
Yeah, and excuse me, I think I'm thinking of a few weeks ago when we were broadcasting Champions Cup, there was a matter of if someone finished in such and such spot that guaranteed their tour card. And I guess that's what I was thinking, but that might've been specific because it was the major. This weekend in particular, upcoming weekend, as you're heading out to Santa Cruz, you know, knowing Vegas was happening, knowing there's a Q series event, the 303 in Colorado, knowing that Masters Cup is going on, what led you to your decision to go to, you know, Masters Cup specifically, as opposed to any of the others?
So one thing is, since I'm already signed up for the OTB Open, I figured I might as well just come down here and play this one. Also, I am traveling with Rob and Chandler, and they're playing this event. And so I just decided to book it down here with them.
Okay. Makes perfect sense. Is it fair to say that because you're new to tour life and doing what you're doing, most of the courses and most of the things you'll see this year will be pretty much brand new to you? Or have you played any of these other places that we're kind of used to seeing on tour?
Yes, they're all new. They're all new.
Yeah.
So this last weekend, I played Junior Worlds in Emporia. 2022, 2021, or 2022, I don't remember. But I kind of knew the course. I think I knew like the front nine maybe. So that one was like kind of familiar. But other than that, they've all been brand new to me, and they still will continue to be brand new to me.
So what have you, I mean, you've played all the DGBT except for chess.com. What's been your favorite so far? Yes. What type of courses do you really enjoy or look forward to going to? Do you prefer the DDO style, or do you prefer more, we'll say, like a Beaver State?
So I actually don't know the Beaver State course.
I was just going to say.
yeah. Honestly, I really liked the Texas State's course. Mm. That one fit really well with my game. I also really like the DDO course. Wooded, I like all disc golf. All disc golf is fun to me. It's just a matter of, will I play the course well or will I kind of not play the course well? But it's all really fun, and I enjoy learning new courses. And I know that next year on tour, going back to these courses, I'm going to be even better than I am this year.
Well, so when you look at, as Johnny was just mentioning, we see the DGPT events this year, 35th, 22nd, 37th at U.S. Women's with a larger field, that eighth place where you just talked about the Texas States, but then 36th at Jonesboro, 24th at Music City, and then a third. Like, a relatively stark contrast. You know, you weren't necessarily averaging in the top 10 or 15. You were averaging much higher, and then this weekend, just the gloves come off and you come out swinging and then some. What was it about this weekend in terms of that, what that led you to such a successful finish?
So I had some kind of personal stuff going on, at Jonesboro and at Music City. Mm. So that was a part of the not so great play. Another part of that was those courses were very elevated, and I am from West Texas, and we don't really have much elevation, so that was kind of new to me, trying to learn how the wind plays with all the elevation and all of that. So hopefully next year I'll kind of have it down and show up a little better on those courses. This last weekend, I think I just finally got back in my groove and started feeling better about all the personal stuff that's been going on. I felt more like myself in my mind, and it physically felt more like myself. So I think that's probably what the difference was.
Have you had a chance to play De La yet, or are you not there?
We just got here.
All right. Well, I want you to take everything you learned from Jonesboro and Music City about elevation, and hopefully store that away and bring it to De La, because a lot of up and down there.
Yeah, and keep your fingers crossed that you don't get De La'd or it rolls away.
Yeah, slow discs, slow discs.
I heard about that.
I was just going to ask.
Rob
was
telling me about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, either through coverage or just through conversation, what's your anticipation of the De La Viega course this weekend? Or, because I know you're playing actually a couple different ones, but what's your anticipation about De La specifically?
Honestly, I saw the first three holes. That's all I know.
Okay.
And yeah, Rob was just telling me about the rollaways, and I was just like, well, hopefully that doesn't happen to me, but if it does, it is what it is.
You can always abandon a lie. That's what we say.
Yes. Something that you've talked about is that you feel, maybe your strong suit can be your putting, which obviously I don't think will hurt you on any course, regardless of the style. What are some of your insights to putting that have made you successful, or where you found your success? What are some of the insights, if you were to explain it to a brand new person and how you've been able to perform well, what are some of the things that you go through or think about when it comes to your putt?
So something kind of different, I think, from everybody else is I never will choose a spot on the basket to aim. I will always aim at the middle because in my mind, I know what needs to happen for the disc to get into the basket, depending on wind or whatever. In my mind, I have it all in there. I visualize the putt. So I'm always aiming at the middle because that's where I want to hit. But other than that, like my stance, I've messed with my stance so much, and I just recently kind of widened it. So it's like a, not exactly staggered, but also not a straddle putt. It's kind of in between, closer to staggered, I would say. So that is like a big thing to try and get my back leg kind of out of the way, I want to say, is why I do that.
Mm-hmm.
And having a routine. Having a routine is a big part, and I know that a lot of people say that. It is very true. Having a routine that you stick to is huge with putting.
Just to dial in on that a little bit more, what do you feel like your routine consists of, mentally and physically? What is that? What does your routine to mean in your head to you?
So my routine is just like visualizing it, going through it maybe one or two times, and taking at least one deep breath before I release the putter. Deep breaths are very huge in my routine for mm-hmm. drives and putting.
Yeah, we see Missy Gannon do the same thing before almost every drive. She stands right at the back of the tee box, mm-hmm. takes a big breath, probably envisions what she wants to do and does it. It's not a bad routine to follow, as we can see.
You know, and I know you talked about who you've played with before and some of your maybe your earlier, more formative play, but is there any MPO or FPO player that when you think about their game or their style, even anything to do with their form, is there anyone that you either feel like you've mimicked or in any way emulate or look up to or anything? Is there any other player that you could, connect with in that sense?
Honestly, I wouldn't say that I have mimicked anybody. I'd say I kind of found my own kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
But I will also say that talking to Owen and hearing about like her mental game, the way that she explains her thought process about disc golf, is somewhere that I want to be, because she has a great mental game and I would love to be right there with her.
Yeah, and I think most of the world, from what Owen then also displays outwardly, I think most of the world loves what she brings to the table. Usually one of the largest, loudest cheerleaders on the card for all the other players. And then, it also feels like she always takes responsibility for her own throws, her own actions, just everything that happens. Like I feel like she pretty much, pardon the stupid pun. Yeah. She owns it, but that's what I feel like you get out of her. And I love even the introspective where she's always says, some days I have bad days. And I think that's big for a lot of our players to recognize is you can be one of the best in the world, but you still got to be afforded an off day once in a while.
Yeah.
When you go into this final round this weekend and knowing that things are so competitive, knowing that things are so close, what is your mentality being on the chase card going into, your last 18 holes?
So honestly, right before the round, I had a coffee with a shot of espresso in it. And okay. I was just going. I was energetic. My warm-up went great. I was just ready. I had kind of no thoughts besides, I can do this. That was my only thought process, was I can do this. I'm here for a reason. I got myself here. I'm going to continue to show that I deserve to be here.
I have to ask then, does that at all conflict with your sponsor? Can you talk about you kind of right now are without a major disc manufacturer, but is it Raise Energy? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
so Raise Energy.
Yeah. Talk about
that. Yes. So that is Raise Energy. We have a bunch of different energy drinks. They're all no sugar, no dyes. They're great. They taste great. That particular morning, I was very much in a coffee mood. I was pretty exhausted. It had been a long week. So coffee was there, and I was like, I think I'm going to go with that for today. But yes, Raise Energy is great. Raise Energy always gets me very pumped up for the round. So yeah, I love both. Coffee,
I got
energy.
All just to follow up on that, though, I got to ask, how did that come about? That are they local to where you are out of Texas, or like how did that relationship get started?
Yeah, so back home we have a guy that kind of runs it for Texas. Like it's out of Texas, the big company, but he runs it for Texas and is kind of like the disc golf sponsor of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like a regional and rep has a connection.
Yeah, a rep is a good word for it, yeah. So I've known him a long, 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 long time, and he saw me play, and he's watched me over the years get better, and he was like, hey, I really want to sponsor you, and then we're here.
Perfect.
So. Okay. So if you're not sponsored by a major disc manufacturer yet, what are you throwing? Like, what is your bag consist of? Do you lean towards one manufacturer? Do you just have a good variety? Is there something like, I like them, these mids, but these putters? Like, tell us a little bit about your bag.
Yep. Very mixed. So I have a lot of Innova. I throw a lot of Destroyers. I have a Tern, Firebirds. So my main drivers, I would say, are Innova. Mids, I have two Lone Star mids. One mint disc mid, and I also have some Trilogy mixed in there as well. My harps are, I depend on my harps for my upshots. And then my putters are mint profits. So very, very mixed. And I don't know what to do about any offers that I'm going to get. So,
Other than your drivers, it's very Texas.
That's one angle. Now, I guess with that, I'm clearly not unique in asking this question, is especially since Sunday afternoon, have any major manufacturers reached out to you, and how will you, if so, if they haven't yet or they eventually do, how are you going to approach that decision making here mid-season?
So I'm going to definitely take my time with it. I'm not going to rush to any decisions. I'm also kind of asking others to give their opinions on it, just so I make the right decision. I'm not just, you know, I don't really know much about this yet. I'm still learning. So anybody that I can ask that can kind of help me to make a decision, I am doing that, which is another reason why I'm not going to rush into anything. I'm going to kind of like hear out different offers and see what fits best.
Do you have any formal
management?
No, I was going to say goal in terms of, you know, by the time, you know, you're at the World Championships or maybe by the time of 2025, do you have any timeline or goal where you think, yeah, I really would be like to be locked in with some given sponsor, or is even the timeline wide open?
Nope, the timeline is wide open. I'm just going with the flow of everything, seeing where this road takes me.
Have you, speaking of what I kind of mentioned to Terry, have you talked to anybody about management? As far as agents or anything like that, for who, I know obviously on the tour, there's Nate Perkins, who I think is still doing some of that, working with players to work on sponsorships. I know there's a few other companies out there. Have you been in contact with any of them or talked to any other players about that?
Or type LWS of? Or anyone else?
I actually have not, but that is something that I probably will be looking into.
Yeah, I think not only can they assist and do some negotiating, which might be awkward, but obviously they're going to be able to provide additional insight because of some of the history that they have. So that might be where it could really be helpful to you to explore the different options, especially if you don't know really, you know, how good or bad is any one offer, you know, going to be actually be until you talk to other people. I guess speaking of, you know, goals and timelines, do you, obviously you're competitive, but do you have an expectation or a goal as to when you think you could be crowned champion at an elite series or major event?
I'm pushing for it every week that I play. Honestly, I'm just trying to play the course. I'm not worried about anybody else in the division. I'm just playing the course, playing rating. Just trying to be the best that I can be in that moment.
When you look at the other women in the division, where do you see your deficiencies? Like when you go like, oh, I really need to be better at this, whether it's forehand or backhand or distance or C2 putting, like where are your deficiencies on the course that you feel you need to work on in order to get to that level?
Definitely my forehand. And as I learned this past weekend, my patent pending shots are not great. So those two things are what I'm going to be focusing on in practice for sure.
You'll need that at Dayla.
I was just going to say, forehands, of course, I feel like those always are good for scrambling, but a patent pending of sorts feels like a shot that will probably, if we fast forward like 4 days or 5 days, you're going to say, yeah, I had like 9 of those this weekend or 20 opportunities.
Yeah.
Just the way that course lays out.
Yeah, I think I had 6 this past weekend at the course I was at. So
now, with regard, I know we're kind of bouncing backwards, but with regard to this weekend, did I hear that the event it's not exclusively at Dayla this weekend for the Masters Cup? Are you playing 2 or 3 different courses? Are you playing 3 different courses?
So we're playing Dayla twice, but 2 different layouts.
Okay.
And then
Pinto
and Lake? Then yeah, Pinto Lake is also okay. One okay. That we're playing.
Okay. That's what I thought I heard. And I know one of the maybe some other division is maybe playing a different course. But anyway, I thought they had 3, but maybe it's not the case. But and you'll get 2 very different styles even out there this weekend that Pinto and Dayla, you know, don't really play at all like one another. What's your practice going to look like? What day is it? Tuesday? So you got Wednesday and Thursday. Are you going to take on one course at a time, you know, one day at a time? Or what's kind of your practice for the next couple days?
So I don't want to overdo myself. So I'm probably just going to do 1 round at Dayla, 1 round at Pinto and call it good.
Okay. Then I guess going back to when you're talking about traveling and before when you said Rob and Chandler, you're talking about Chandler Kramer and Robert Burridge, right? Are you in a position where you're doing like the Airbnb styles? Are you camping? Like what's kind of the game plan for how you're touring? Because everybody has what feels like a very different solution from person to person these days.
Yeah. So last weekend I stayed in a hotel and this weekend I'm staying in an Airbnb.
Okay.
I don't know about next weekend yet. When I get there, I'll know.
Okay. So taking it as you go, which is certainly very understandable. And I think the lessons that you know, whether it's a journal or just literally receipts or pictures, like the stuff you'll pick up this year becomes so valuable, you know, for the subsequent years. Just those are building blocks of like, okay, when we're in this city, we always want to do this. Or when we're in that city, let's not do that again. One example I'll say is this last weekend, one of the Disc Golf Pro Tour media staff was saying, we normally do the RV at the RV park, but we were a little hesitant due to the possibilities of tornadoes and thunderstorms and everything else. So we opted for a hotel and like you just kind of pick those things up as you go and you know.
Well, I think about a few weeks ago in Houston, I was watching Evelina Solonen's Instagram and she was kind of driving up to where their Airbnb was. I don't think I would stay there. It looked like they maybe found a inexpensive one and it wasn't necessarily in the nicest parts of town. Oh. And I just think like, wow, those are things that you just don't know that you need to learn because when you're looking for an Airbnb in Houston, for instance, you just think, I'll find one near one of the courses and you maybe don't know the layout of the land. So yeah, it's quite an adventure your first year on tour.
Yeah, I want to say it was Waco, maybe, that we got an Airbnb, and man, it was terrible. The shower was broken whenever I tried to use it, so we ended up having to, like, call the woman, and she gave us another Airbnb to stay in for the rest of the week, and it ended up being okay, but it was very sketchy. it's definitely, like, a iffy situation, but there is a van to come hopefully very soon. It's in the works right now.
So awesome.
That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a whole nother. I mean, we've seen so many of our players take on to that van life, or go from car to minivan, or minivan to regular van, or everything in between. And that's just another, you know, gigantic leap. But you've got to schedule and coordinate and plan around that. I think of Paige Pierce this last weekend, basically ripping the fan out, the one that's been leaking, ripping it out of her van and trying to re-caulk it for like the third or fourth time because it's leaking on her while she's sleeping. Like, those are all, you know, obviously that's kind of the downside, but those are all some of the things that come as part of your van life. What would you say is a bucket list or goal item of yours to do that, to do or see that's off the course this year, knowing you're going to see a lot more of the country than you probably have seen in the past. What jumps out at you as something that you care to, to take in this year?
So, on my Instagram, I tend to post a lot of like pretty views and stuff, of like forests, like rainy little places, really pretty green nature. And so I'm just excited to see all the nature, especially going to Oregon. I am very excited to go to Oregon. So I think that will be the main one.
Then in that kind of setting and style, is it hiking and taking pictures? Is it camping? Is it, waterfall seeking or swimming holes? Like, what are some of the things about nature that you, anything in particular that you seek out, agate hunting, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I would say definitely the waterfalls, the swimming, hiking, all of that kind of is what I'm looking for.
You're going to love Beaver State Fling.
yeah.
That course is everybody. It's renowned for the swimming and the camping and the preserve as well. Both of those are going to be
like Clackamas River, a little bit of canoeing, all that stuff. Just make sure you're good and safe with all of that. I think that's probably one of the things you'll also learn just in general is that fine balance of, you know, the fun extracurricular stuff of living life and enjoying nature and being outside and hiking and swimming and all these crazy things. And then balancing that with like, hey, I got to still be careful because I got to go throw some frisbees, you know, on the weekend.
Yeah.
So that's my fatherly advice for you.
I appreciate it.
So the event closed out and there was obviously, I would say, unfortunately, one of the biggest conversations of the weekend, besides your incredible play, turned out to be your last hole of play, the 54th hole of competition, hole number 18.
Yes.
And
yes.
Well, rather, I'll react. How about you give your experience for how a hole 18 played out and like what was involved with that?
Okay. So walking up to the tee box, it started to rain a little more. I had been dealing with the slippery tee boxes as it was everybody else. So going into it, I was a little bit, I wasn't throwing as comfortably as normal with the slippery tee box and was more focused on not falling than executing my shot properly. As soon as I released the shot, I knew that it wasn't great and that it had a potential to go OB. And I was pretty frustrated. I'm not really sure what they showed of my reaction, but I like put my hands on my knees and kind of put my head down. And we didn't get a green or red flag yet. And so we were like, okay, let's just go up there and see what's going on. As we walk up there, everybody's like, oh, wow, that's very close. I look at it. I saw it touching green grass. I tried to fight that it was in. Unfortunately, my card mates decided that it was not in, and there was nothing I could do about it. So I then from there just tried to see how far it was to the green. And I clocked it at 355 right over the water. I wasn't really comfortable with throwing that. My caddy, Rob, told me that I should probably just lay up and take a bogey. So I did, and I got a podium finish. So I ended with an unfortunate bogey, but like I said, it is what it is. It wasn't my decision, and the card did what they thought was correct, and that's okay.
What is your distance about when you throw?
Honestly, I don't know. I surprise myself sometimes. I'm like, oh, wow, that went pretty far. I think I could have thrown it 355 and I would have been fine. But with the conditions, the weather, the slipperiness, the wet disc, sticky hands, all of that, I just wasn't really wanting to push it.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And that was going to be my next question, knowing that you were one stroke out of the possible, I mean, what eventually ended up being a playoff. We didn't know when that happened to you. Mm-hmm. Hindsight being 2020, looking back now, would you go for it, thinking maybe I could get in? Seeing as how if you don't, it drops you probably down to seventh place, because then you're going to miss you're probably going to gain at least two strokes there and then drop out of the, you know, you'll go from third to, we'll say, seventh. Would you take that risk for the opportunity to get in that playoff, or are you just kind of content with third right now?
I think I made the correct decision.
Okay.
I think that not pushing it and making the smart decision was the right thing to do.
And just to clarify, 355 is what you clocked it to the pin or to the short side of the green, or to, I'm sorry, to the, just to clear the water. Was it 355 to the pin?
It was just to clear the water. 355.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, that's, you have to throw an accurate shot to a slope that gets at least 355 with all the things that you were considered.
With a little bit of weather happening.
Yeah. I don't, I guess I don't second guess that at all.
No.
And not that I did even then either, but I definitely don't when you say 355 just to the edge of the water.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it out there for the sake of putting it out there that you had thrown, this is my perspective, you had thrown, then I waited for the rest of your group to throw. And I was, I don't know if I was 20 or 30 feet away from it. I was maybe even 40 or 50 feet away from it. And you had thrown, and I knew it was getting close to the OB line. And I think it was an X that they put up, meaning they weren't sure if it was in or out of bounds. At that point, I personally, after all four of your card mates had thrown, I walked up to your disc and I stood over the top of it. And I think that's when I messaged our producer, who has no official standing of anything either. I messaged to him. I said, it's going to be really close, but I think that's out. And then I stepped back and I waited for all of you guys to get up there. And I don't know if I was watching the next group on the green or whatever. And then once I realized that the card was going to have or was having a discussion, understandably, then I moved from that spot back up to where you guys were. And that's right when I walked in, I think is when I heard maybe Rebecca say, I hope I'm right in saying this, something along the lines of, you know, I just don't see it. That I could call that in, that looks out, or something, paraphrasing, something of that nature. And then obviously I could see disappointment on your face and probably some frustration or probably a whole mix of emotions I can't even guess on your behalf, but probably something along those lines. And then it played out. One of the reasons why this is such a topic is, I believe, is because the angles in which people watched and saw where it was or wasn't, there's a lot, and I mean thousands, a lot of people loudly screaming that it was obviously in, and that, like, as if there was no doubt or no question, and then some pulling out the wrong rule about benefit of the doubt and whatever. But a lot of people screaming that. Would you depict it as saying it was far tougher a decision than maybe even the internet thinks it was? Would that be a fair assessment? Let me rephrase that. When you walked up, were you like, oh, that's obviously in? Did that thought cross your mind?
No, I definitely looked at it for at least a few seconds before I was like, okay, I see a piece of green grass that it is touching inbounds. And I tried to point it out to my card mates, and whether they looked at it or not, I'm not too sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they, you know, saw what I was seeing. Maybe I just wanted it to look that way, but I was pretty positive that it was in. But they didn't think so. So
sure.
It's okay.
Yeah. And I think that unfortunately, then the internet immediately also wants to take it like an extra step and start throwing a lot of projections in there of, you know, were they trying to bully you, or somebody had something to gain from it, or, you know, if you were on a different card with different people, could it have gone differently? Obviously anything's possible. For me though, I guess I was just wondering is if you felt if it was just the 3-1 vote, and if that was fairly arrived at, or if that's just part of the rules, or maybe even the better question is, how would you like to see that situation handled moving forward? If it was identical for someone else next time, how does that situation not become as controversial?
Honestly, I think that everybody on the card said what they thought was correct, and that's the rules, and there's nothing that I could do about it. There's nothing that anybody on the internet could do about it either, even now. I've been reading a lot of the comments as well, and I've seen some that were defending me, some that weren't. So, honestly, it was just a really tough call, and it could have gone either way. And I think, yeah, depending on card mates, it could have gone inbounds, because you see online there's so many people that think it was in, and there's so many people that think it was out. So I do believe that different card mates it could have been in, but that was not the case. I had the card mates that I had, which was a great card, but it didn't go my way, and that's okay.
First of all, I think that's been incredibly
mature,
and I feel like a great way to describe it. At every stage within disc golf, we're always with the group, or even an official. Even an official is always going to have some ounce of judgment and non-perfection that can come into play on any call at any part on any course, right? I mean, there's, you know, I see people talking about string and a million other things. There's always going to be like a pair of eyes that are watching, whether they're yours and your card mates or it's an official standing there. There's always going to be that possibility. And it sounds like you've handled it and it accepted it in a very mature way. And all I'll say to kind of wrap it up is, I personally, because I've been asked this myself from others, I personally, of course, have no, so to speak, dog in the fight. And from my eye, when I took a quick look at it from standing right over the top of it, I initially just thought it was out of bounds. That's what it looked like to me. Now, I didn't dissect it for the next 30 seconds or 2 minutes or anything and have a conversation with anyone.
You had other things going on.
But that's what I saw. And I clearly would never wish ill on anyone to not be in bounds for any single shot or situation, but that's how I called it and that's how I saw it. I also, thank goodness, it doesn't matter what I thought. I mean, nobody cares what I think, because I have no bearing on your play in that realm whatsoever. But I do overall, I just think you've handled it very well. And I think that speaks probably even more for your competitive / character than anything, is that there wasn't a tantrum, there wasn't cussing out, there wasn't anything of that nature whatsoever. And yes, it sucked that you it didn't go your way, so to speak, but I think how you handled it speaks, you know, more than maybe anything else could have. So I certainly commend you on that. And even if I did think you were out of bounds, it wasn't personal,
and it doesn't matter if you think.
Honestly, there's no need for any like mean comments coming from me about the situation.
Sure.
Like it should have been a better shot. That's honestly what I think, is I should have thrown a better shot. And had I thrown a better shot, it would have been completely fine. This would have been avoided. So
yeah, and
it's on me.
And that's a great way to look at it. And just like I've said, literally, as long as I've been watching any sports, we always put so much emphasis on the final hole or the final two holes, the final play, the Hail Mary shot, you know, throw at the end of a football, whatever, you know, the missed field goal to lose the Super Bowl. It's like, yeah, you should have just been up by 10, you know, going into the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that's, again, a very mature way to look at it is, you know, if things would have gone better at any other point, that we wouldn't be having such a controversial, you know, conversation that there. So I can appreciate that as well. Well, hopefully you carry that, and I think the rest of the card will carry that on as no, you know, It's not like there should be any harbor, you know, feelings pent up or anything of that nature. So I certainly appreciate that. From here, what would you say? I know you talked about like maybe the things you do or you want to work on, but what would you say is the biggest lesson that you took away from this weekend's experience? Just overall, and I don't mean anything with that particular play or call or throw, just in general.
Yeah. Honestly, just to enjoy it. Like, I enjoyed it so much. I think there's a lot of times that I've played tournaments and not enjoyed it and just been way too competitive. Competitive is a good thing, but I think I've been too competitive in the past. And this one, I was just enough competitive and also enjoying myself and having a great time and learning things in the process. So I think that would be the lesson that I took from it.
Which is, again, sounds mature and insightful. How much of a help, and I don't know if it's a scale 1 to 10 or if you can even possibly quantify this, but how much of a help is it to have someone as skilled and knowledgeable as Robert Burridge on the bag? How much of a help was he this weekend?
He was a great help. He helped me make some smart decisions, including laying up after that OB on hole 18. There is an upshot 13 or 14, the long par 5.
Yep, 14.
The Firebird upshot that I did that they posted about, that one was his call. That Firebird upshot was his call. So there's been, and there was more, of course, but those are the ones that I can think of in my brain that he helped me make a decision on, and so helpful. Obviously, he knows tour golf. He knows to play smarter rather than more aggressive, depending on the situation. And it was a big help, and I'm so thankful that he was there, given the fact that he had technically only 10 minutes to get to his tee time once we were finished, because he's got that you have to be there 5 minutes prior. And yeah, I'm just so thankful that he was there.
A heck of an assistant there. And I guess you already answered what would have been the next question, which is talking about, you know, some players have a caddy or support person that literally might just be there to, you know, talk music or play games and make jokes with. And then some players have actual, you know, involvement. You know, I think of a Tom and a Missy, clearly, like they're talking out what feels like every shot to some degree about literally what disc and angles. And it sounds like Robert kind of fits that category more so of like actively talking about shot selection and throwing, right?
Yes. So most of the time, I would say about 70% of the time, I would grab a disc that I would immediately think of it, grab a disc, and I would ask him, do you think I'm making the right decision? And a lot of the times he would say yes, or he would give his opinion on what he thinks I should do. And I don't always take his opinion. I go with what feels right. But then there are times that I'm questioning even what I think. And that is when I will use what he says and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to trust it. I'm going to throw it confidently. And that's what we did. And it worked great.
Yeah. Which is great. I love hearing that when, you know, there's a lot of different ways in which that person can be your support. And I love how you just explained it. Where did that whole relationship start with him, you know, being on your bag, you providing him with that much trust or entrusting him that much? How did that, you know, come about?
So I met Robin Chandler at the Crush on the Con show in March, the beginning of March.
Okay.
And since then, so Raise Energy, my sponsor, also picked them two up. And so we've all kind of been friendly, talkative, all of that. Just recently, me and Rob have started talking more, being more friendly. And that was actually the first time that he has caddied for me. And so it's all pretty new, but we just have been hanging out together a lot. We've been doing fun stuff outside of disc golf, like going and playing pool, doing escape rooms, all of that fun stuff.
Everybody does escape rooms on the tour, it feels like. It's like that's every group, I feel like, is doing an escape room.
No, obviously a good time to get out. With the success that you had this weekend, is this immediately like an assumed thing? Like, hey, Robert, what do you...
when's your tee time?
Yeah, when's your tee time? And do you think you can rely on him a little bit more to be on the bag here moving forward?
I believe so, and I hope so. We haven't really talked about it, but I think so. And it's also, it goes the other way too. I would be on his bag.
Okay.
But I don't really give my opinion on his shots because he tends to know what he's doing a little better than I do. But I will say the last round, whenever I went to caddy for him, I did give him a... my opinion on what he should do on hole 17, and he threw a phenomenal shot, and I took all the credit for it because it was great. It
sounds
as
right
as you should. And the, well, I mean, honestly, the more you practice with him, the more you caddy for him, the more you'll learn his game and maybe realize his shortcomings and his strengths that you can maybe help influence those type of shots, you know, whether he should be aggressive or maybe more conservative.
Yeah, I would say I'm more there to help with his mental game. Try and keep him more, you know, smiley and having a good time, laughing off the bad shots that happen. And there's one thing that he had told me to do, which was to remind him about his offhand whenever he's putting. And so anytime that his putt looks a little off, I just give him a little reminder, hey, remember to do this. And that's pretty much what I'm there for.
So to follow that up, maybe this is a little bit of a reach, maybe not, but I think of Robert's insight where he was, you know, thrust into this playoff with Simon Lazat a couple of years ago or shot himself into this playoff. And at that time, he was a little bit less of a known commodity. I mean, nobody had... as great of a guy as he is and was and is, nobody necessarily was like, oh yeah, I think Robert Burrage is going to push this, you know, the Des Moines Challenge into a playoff this weekend. I don't think he'd be insulted by, you know, me saying that, but all of a sudden he's there in the spotlight. He ultimately has this incredible playoff where he comes up just short to Simon. Fair or not, I see a little similarity in that sense that you show up, you've played in a few events, and then you show up and here you are finishing on the podium, and everybody is now has to take note of what you've done and your accomplishment. Am I crazy for drawing a similarity there?
No, we actually talked about that as well. He has like been like, I know how it is. I know how you feel because this happened. And I don't really know. I don't know the entire situation with the playoff. I don't know the whole story about it, but he's kind of talked about it here and there. So yeah, I think it's really cool that you bring that up because we actually did talk about that.
Good. I feel like the stories are in a sense similar in that just like instant stardom of like, hey, everyone has to take note because you just had this incredible performance. We know that there's no way that's a fluke that you finish in the top three at the Dynamic Disc Open. And we're just, you know, one stroke out of the playoff, so to speak. So, yeah, it's very cool. That's funny. Well, good for you that someday you may get to go, you may have the pleasure of going back and seeing how that all went down on his side. And he could probably break down everything he was thinking and feeling. And it was an incredible playoff. Hole two's putt.
The huge putt he hit. And then,
oh my gosh.
And then the unfortunate stump that he ended up hitting.
Stump gate.
We don't want to spoil
stuff
it for you.
So much good stuff. Emily, is there anything that we didn't bring up or that we didn't uncover? Any rock we left unturned, so to speak, of things you'd like to share, discuss, talk about, put out there? Anything else that obvious that we should have mentioned here tonight?
I don't think so. I think we've covered pretty much everything.
All right.
We try not to be too intrusive, but people need to get to know you even better, especially if you're going to be under the spotlight. I guess maybe that's the follow up there, though, is how do you feel about the spotlight? How do you feel about extra attention and the pressure that it may or may not bring?
I love it. I love all the pressure. I feel like I belong here. And so it feels good to finally make it, because this is what I've wanted. And I finally feel like I've got my foot in the door and I'm ready to just start running.
What would you consider a success moving forward? And I'll qualify that by saying we've seen men and women kind of have a breakout performance, but then it's the follow-up. I mean, even Andrew Presnell, you know, says he didn't have the major hangover. He won the major and was even maybe a little nervous how he'd perform this weekend, which happened to turn out great for him. But what do you need to do to kind of feel like you're maintaining being in the right space?
Honestly, the main thing that comes to mind is just top tens. Okay. If I can get top tens, I'll feel really good about it. Obviously I want to be up there in podiums, and I hope that that's the case, but I don't want my expectations to be too high, especially with playing all these courses blind, while a lot of these touring pros have played these for years. I don't have super high expectations, but I know that I can at least be in the top 10, and I should be with where my game is at and how I'm feeling.
Yeah, and pardon my memory, but I feel like we may have even asked the same question of Robert back then, and he was in a similar position of, hey, I'm new on the tour. I've got all these courses to learn, where some of these people have been playing De La literally for 25 or 30 years this upcoming weekend. But, you know, some of these people have been on tour for full time for 8 or 10 years, and you're... You got to catch up even just to the ins and outs of each course. So it's a taller task. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, well, sure. I know we talked a little bit about sponsors, but please, for the world to know how they can support you and how they can go out and support your sponsors, list off any and all sponsors that you wish to list, and then list any ways that people could either follow or support you and any kind of socials that you maybe put out there for the world to see.
Yeah, so my sponsors are Raise Energy Abilene. That's kind of a more in-person thing, to buy drinks off of me, buy drinks from them whenever they're vending at tournaments, which we do hit up quite a few of the DGPT events. I'm sure a lot of people have seen our stand. I know we've been doing pretty good. Big Country Beef Jerky. I know that's kind of getting out there. A lot of people know about that. Groundbound, Good Dog Disc Golf. I'm on their team. I have my own Groundbounds. So that's also a me thing. Just come to me about it. I have some discs with my stamps on them that I sell at tournaments. Normally like block parties, fly marts, all that.
Okay.
And I'm just about to partner with Drive Bags. So... There's going to be those coming as well. So that's exciting. And then I'm also going to give a shout out to Tumbleweed 20 back home. So, yeah.
Awesome. And so any social media that you keep up on or that you're working on or you might have a team work on, anything there or not necessarily?
So my Instagram is just emily.weatherman and my Facebook's Emily Weatherman. That's about all I've got at the moment. I'm hopefully going to start up YouTube again. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I said it back then and I haven't done it. So I've been very busy.
Understandably.
YouTube's a big commitment.
It certainly is. There's no doubt about that. So awesome. Well, Emily, all of the congratulations and accolades we could possibly throw at you are so well deserved, and obviously, we wish you the best. I know I spoke to you immediately after the tournament just for a moment, but super happy for you and the success that you had this weekend. And everything that's to follow. I mean, you have a new heightened sense probably of expectations and the world I know is going to be excited to see what you can do with it. And we wish you nothing but the best here throughout the year. And hopefully we've got more reasons, even additional reasons to interview and talk to you as you have all these new experiences and find some more successes later on this year. So thank you so much for joining us this tonight. I know you had a long day of travel all the way across the country. And of course, we wish you the best out there in California and on your West Coast swing. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I enjoyed this so, so much.
Good.
Thanks a lot.
We love it. We appreciate you being here. All right, Emily, have a good night. Have a good weekend. And we'll encourage everyone to go out and follow you on the Instagrams and do everything they can to support you as you just called off. And if you ever have any other news or exciting things going on or anything else you want to share, you're welcome here anytime. We'll take you. We appreciate you.
Awesome. Thank you. Y'all have a great night.
See ya. Thanks, have a good night.
Thanks.
Goodbye. Emily Weatherman getting it done.
Yeah. Third place at the age of 18.
Yeah. Just overall, think about, you know, and I know someone kind of referenced it in the chat, but she is obviously one of our next rising stars. Mm-hmm. And to see her start or get really fully embodied in this tour life and to know that this is the start for her, like, you know, put it on your calendar, whether it's in 2 or 5 or 10 years and seeing, you know, future successes and things from her. You, with the way you watch her drive and then the way in which we saw how she can putt as well, this weekend, just so impressive. And then the poise, some confidence,
I think
calmness, like she really
combined that
displays all of it.
Learning, being able to learn from her touring partners, Chandler and Robert, like they've been on the road. They know what it takes, you know, to be in that spotlight. Chandler Kramer had the same thing happen to him.
Yeah.
He popped up and suddenly he was the big thing for a while. I just think she has nowhere to go but up. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I'm excited for the next few years to see how well she continues to play. And I don't think we need a weatherman to know that it's like thundering and lightning outside. It's storming. I don't know if you guys can hear it through the microphones or not, but
wait, is that a Stormy Daniels reference too? Are you tying all of pop culture and references together?
I hope it doesn't get Haley King out there because your car is out there, Terry.
It did hail on me today. Speaking of which, and I've asked a few people this. At one point I was in my office and I heard, you know, some thunder and some other things going on. And then I saw a little bolt of lightning, whatever. So it's going to be stormy today. No big deal. And then just bam, bam. Like, I'll show you, like, some legitimate almost marble-sized, like, small marbles. Like,
sure.
Enough where I was right about my car. Like, my car's parked outside. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, am I going to be making a hail claim?
Well, I sure hope not, Terry.
No, and it doesn't appear that they did. But yeah, I went out to my car because those hail pellets were coming down.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, and it sounds like I was in a pretty isolated area because everyone I talked to, it's like, yeah, no, that didn't hit here.
No, we didn't get any hail. Area. We had a bunch of rain. Let's continue to talk about FPO, though. Now that we got our interview with Emily taken care of, winning this event, Missy Gannon wins in a playoff over Haley King, which we'll talk about the playoff situation in just a little bit, but they tied at 5 under par for the round. This was also a combined aggregate playoff. Thank you, Terry. I couldn't draw that one out. So anyway, Missy Gannon and Haley King at 5 under, 4 under our guest tonight, Emily Weatherman. In fourth place, there was a 3-way tie at 3 under between Natalie Ryan, Holland Hanley, and Lisa Fakus. In seventh place, Kat Murch at +1. Eighth place, a name that probably I didn't really know, Emily Arp. I'm sorry, Emma Arp. Mm-hmm. Right underneath that is Emily Beach. Apparently my eyes don't work very well. So Emma Arp, followed up by Emily Beach, and then Ellie Ezra Midling, In ninth place, tied with Owen Scoggins, Rebecca Cox. Wow. Emma, Emily, Eliezra. That was a little tough for me. But ultimately, Terry, do you know anything about Emma Arp?
I can't say that I know her too well. She's out of Nebraska, and I don't think that we've seen her at a ton of events. And
she shot a 964 rated round, which is 57 points higher than her average. I'm sorry, not round, event average, which is 57 points above her player rating. So amazing. That's just phenomenal.
What can you, when you pull her up, and maybe we should have just had her on tonight. What do you see out of her, had her on as well. What do you see out of her, history, so to speak? She looks like she's a COVID player.
Yeah. She's been playing for about 5 years, since 2020,
or at least a PDGA member.
That
we know of.
Yeah. Yep. Playing those events. Like I said, she's currently rated 907 out of Nebraska. Looks like she played the Open at Austin, took 45th. She's won a bunch of events, smaller B tiers, big 2024 Bigfoot, second annual Future Legend, the Mocan Battle, Spring Fever Fling, and the St. Charles Open presented by Smoke and Aces. So, and that, which was an A tier. She won an A tier this year. That a pretty solid resume. Mm-hmm. Took 58th at U.S. Women's. So it sounds like as of right now, she's a pretty solid regional player that is maybe starting to dip her toes into the professional scene, so to speak, the pro tour.
Ultimately, and what else is she signed up for?
Currently signed up to play the 46th annual Norman Pro-Am, supported by Innova.
This 40, weekend.
46th annual. Wow.
It's been a minute over there.
Been a minute in Norman,
Oklahoma.
She's also scheduled to play the 2024 Star City Classic. When the tour comes back over to Des Moines, she'll be playing that. And then she's playing in a Q Series. So it looks in like either she's playing the Kansas City Wide Open just to play it, or the Q Series maybe to try and earn a tour card. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Good for her. She's got 54 career wins already. Wow. I'm trying to look at when she started playing Open. She played Open all of last year, quite a bit, as well as a little MA3. She went from MA3 to
Open. MA3. I think it was just MA3. A matter of probably there was no one else to play against.
No FA.
FA or FPO
players.
So just playing MA3.
Yeah, she's been playing for a while.
FPO all the way back to 2021 at least.
Yeah, 2021 it looks like is when she started.
Yeah, she very FPO. Quickly moved up the ranks.
So good for her. Awesome. Another new name. Out there on tour, it's good to see. So hopefully we can see some possible future from her. Well, let's talk a little bit about the playoff between Missy and Haley. Ultimately, hole 18, Haley had the opportunity to win. It looked like she was all lined up for it. All she had to do was throw about a 250 foot shot over some water, of which Haley has all day long, and she misjudged it and fluffed it. Comes up short to go into the water. And from there, gets to move up to the water, throws it pretty much under the basket. It's able to tap in. And then we're going to a playoff, Terry. The playoff goes to hole 16 first, which, as we all know, is the island hole. Haley throws a beautiful shot, puts it 20 feet out from the pin. Maybe 25 was a little hard to tell from the angle. But Missy skips off the water to get to the island, of which I don't think she made the island the other three rounds.
No, she had struggled mightily.
And she has that distance, so I don't know what her...
Everyone missed the damn island this weekend. MPO and FPO matter.
I agree.
I don't know what kind of crazy vortex or hole.
What did EMAC do to that island?
There is nothing different this year from last year, and I don't have any stats to back this up. It just seemed like this year so many more people were struggling on 16 more than ever.
Well, we could probably call Stat Mando or PDJ Stats and look at the OB strokes on 16 this year versus last year, which would give you a pretty close estimate as to if there was a higher percentage. It did seem like what we saw in coverage, at least, everybody was missing. So there's that. So Missy Gannon skips up onto the island, is far left. She looks like she's got about a 40 footer looking at the water, and she I was sitting there, literally, I was sitting there in Culver's watching it. We had just ordered, our buddy Steve Held and I were kind of sitting there and we're watching it. And I'm just like, yeah, this is an aggregate. She's got three holes. She's going to lay this up. Like, that's the smartest move. Why would you put at that water and more or less blow your opportunity to win? Because if she misses that, she's going OB again. And at that point, or going OB for the first time, not again, she skipped into mm-hmm. it. And probably,
I mean, she's probably losing one stroke if she goes OB.
At least, yeah. I mean, more than likely one.
You go OB after being on, though. I mean, you're going to get a four.
Correct. All right. So then she's down by two. She'd be down by two strokes with two holes to go. Not an ideal situation.
Well, that's assuming Haley makes hers.
Which, Haley was close enough where I didn't think like Haley was going to say. But Missy Gannon throws up this putt, catches high left chain, hyzering and teeters for a split second mm-hmm. on the cage and falls in. I love Missy, but in no world should that putt have stuck. I mean, I watched some good putts not stick, and I've seen some bad putts, you know. That putt probably should not have stuck, but it did. It got the benefit. It fell in. Congratulations. It was a clutch. It was awesome to see that go in. Haley matches it with a two. Missy comes up to hole 17, gets a par three. Haley goes OB right off the drive. Mm-hmm. At that point now, Haley's fighting from behind, and we get to hole 18, and it doesn't really matter at that point. I mean, things could happen, but the way when Missy drove, There was no question about it. Missy needed to go out of bounds there. And it just, they both ended up taking fours and Missy walks away with technically a two stroke playoff victory, which you don't see very often.
No,
maybe one of the first, unless,
no, I mean, you could see it in theory, taps out from long range, you know, or whatever, or throws one in. But you're right. So, yes. So congratulations, of course, to Missy. Back to back years for Haley King going into a playoff. Mm-hmm. Equally as crazy and significant is that's Missy's first ever, I think, career playoff, not just Elite Series or major playoff. But I overheard correctly, that may have been her first ever playoff. Which, with as much golf as she plays, I think you'd be surprised by hearing that. But that's what I thought I heard.
I'm surprised.
Directly or indirectly. There was also a quick conversation that, again, I wasn't near the green for the playoff. For any of the playoff. However, someone had also said that Haley on 18, Haley and or Missy didn't realize it was aggregate, or maybe didn't realize that they were tied. First, I heard they didn't realize they were even going to be tied. And then there was even a distinction made as to that it was an aggregate playoff, which in their defense, I can understand because we haven't seen aggregate playoffs implemented. Yeah. So the fact that it was happening here this weekend certainly was a change. So I can understand that, like, slipping past the players.
Sure.
Let's be real. Not every player's, you know, concerned on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday thinking, man, if I'm in a playoff, okay, yeah, it's aggregate this week. Like, nobody's thinking like that probably anyway, or concerning themselves with it at that point. No. So I can understand all of that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It poses the bigger question, though. Do we like or dislike the implementation of aggregate playoffs?
Like it.
When?
every Pro Tour and hopefully Worlds.
Don't like it. Okay, that's where you're wrong. So
that's where I'm wrong.
Here are lots of things, some of which will be new that I'm sure you guys will spit out and share with us.
Okay.
Some of which won't be.
I'm interested to hear your take, Terry. Why you think it's, why you dislike
it. Right off the bat, look, and I'm, Cole's is a massive, maybe not a massive, he's an anomaly because he ended up walking off in that sense. It was mm-hmm. unique. But for starters, when you're taking the FPO division, this is just one consideration. You're taking the FPO division, putting them into a playoff where they're for sure playing three holes, and you're going into the now the middle of the MPO round. We'll just say that isn't ideal.
Right. It's not. That is very inconvenient for everybody involved. Inconvenient for the FPO because now they maybe have to wait for a hole, someone to finish up a hole, depending on the type of hole it is. You are holding up the MPO round. Now they have to sit and they get cold. Now, to be fair, hole 16 in the past has had waits that, you know, maybe not 45 minutes, but it has been a hole where people have had to wait on.
Yeah, so things moved along pretty well.
But they did move along well this weekend.
Someone said on the board, FPO can be slower. That's a possibility as well. But either way, they're interjected now into the bottom to middle of the MPO players and or in the mix.
Does it matter to you which holes the aggregate?
Well, and that's another interesting question, is because you understand everyone on the planet understands why they're going to 16 in general as a playoff hole.
Because if they're going to six,
if they were going to one, they still, and this has happened at other events, yeah, or just like at Jonesboro 2 years ago with Cap Merch along with Haley mm-hmm. King. Haley's really got a playoff thing. Anyway,
she does.
They went over, in that case, the playoff specifically started on hole 10 and it ended on hole 10. Obviously, that's the middle of the round, the middle of the course, but it happens to be near where the starting point was in that given year, mm-hmm. 2 years ago. So they went right to hole 10 and it only went one hole. Same thing. You're still interjecting. Now, even if these women were going to hole one to start the playoff, which is quote unquote more traditional, mm-hmm. they would have just been interjecting and
later in the cycle.
So,
but I don't think that's better. I would rather see them interject earlier in, or the players that are lower down on the course, so to speak, you know, by going to 16, it
sounds like you're a bottom cardist. You don't care about the bottom cards of MPO.
I am a bottom cardist. You know why? No one cares about the bottom cards of MPO. Ask Cole Redolin if he cares about the bottom cards of MPO.
So that right there is unfortunately this is obviously exclusive to the FPO side in that we saw how that played out. Now we'll talk a little more logistically. There's those things. Then there's just the overall additional 20 to 30 to 45 minutes that are almost guaranteed to ensue, which then shortens cameraman, shortens spotters, volunteers, help, blah, blah, blah. There's all these factors that there's kind of with a lot of positions, obviously, at events. There's a turnover of sorts of people that are doing certain things in the morning and certain things in the afternoon, namely, selfishly, our camera crews and batteries and blah, blah, blah.
I've said this. Ace Run, you're on our board and I love you to death. I don't care about the cameramen. And when it comes to a situation like this, or control room, or anybody that isn't a member on the course, because we are as someone who would be stuck as a control room. There was one year we called wins and losses in the control room as to whether they were playoffs. Like, we would jokingly be like, oh, is this going to be a losing event because we have a playoff? Because we hate them. We hate playoffs because it eats into our lunchtime. It eats into our turnaround time. I get it, but we cannot be considered when it comes to these rules. Like, it just, I know that
there are certain constraints that are practical, though.
There are constraints, but ultimately, unless they're impossible to leap, that's how it works. You know, when it was very difficult at Ledgestone when they would make us bounce between two different courses. Our guys would drive from one course and get right to the other course, just barely in the nick of time to start, mm-hmm. you know, with FPO and MPO. And ultimately that was it doable? Yes. Should it have been done? Talk to the TD, but we have to be such an afterthought in media. My opinion.
Of course, the play is paramount. However, the overall product and experience is what people are paying for too. There's a fine line between the players and then the overall entertainment value that people are getting by watching said players. Like, mm-hmm. there's just has to be this fine balance. And I'm not claiming to know exactly where that line stands, but there is some massaging and some balance that has to take place there.
Yes, 100% agree. Like, it's unfortunate that we have to be considered, that we don't have infinite resources, but I get it. Does this bode more than for having final round cuts?
That's certainly a consideration. But before we even get to that additional comment, then we saw that on the FPO side. It unfolded, and then for those who somehow may or may not have understood or know, they played the three holes. Even if you take a nine on the first hole and a nine on the second hole, you play the third hole. If somehow, though, the players are tied after playing three holes, the overall score of playing those three holes, you go back, in this case, they would go back to 16, and that would start sudden death. That would be your quote-unquote traditional playoff scenario where sudden death would take over, but they would still continue to play mm-hmm. those three holes if there was continuing to be pushes. So I just want to make it clear for everyone, in case somehow it wasn't, that that's how this went. Now, you fast forward into a lot of other events, or maybe reflect on a lot of other events, and let's just say this happens on the FPO side. Then let's say it happens on the MPO side. On the MPO side, specifically, if we experience a lack of daylight or some kind of weather delay that then leads to ultimately a lack of daylight, use the best example of Austin.
Yeah, can that?
What if in Austin that Niklas mm-hmm. doesn't make that putt, and they're forced into a three-hole aggregate playoff?
I question whether that can be overridden by the TD at that point. Say, listen, guys, I know we had on the schedule an aggregate playoff for three holes, but due to time constraints, we are going to limit that to one hole. It is going to be a traditional playoff, so to speak, and go from there.
I'm just saying that's another very valid consideration for how many events that we see that mm-hmm. ultimately have a delay at some point. And then the more you push back that delay, or similarly, I mean, Waco things. Final day? Weren't things, you know, almost even kind of pushing with a looming storm? Again, you add in a 1 or 2 hour delay on any given round, a final day round, that forced or mandated three-hole aggregate playoff. Now, an aggregate playoff, I'm just going to go out on a limb. It could maybe be a two-hole.
Or
could it be four-hole? Is there a magic number that we're only forever agreeing to? And I'll claim ignorant to the PDGA, any stipulation, but what if a TD said, you know what, there's four holes, they make a perfect loop right here, they're relatively easy, we have a four-hole aggregate playoff. That's where it is.
I don't know.
Where are we going to draw that line?
I don't know that answer, but going back to your time issue, Stan Mann on the board says they've called ties before. Like, if an event can't continue, whether that be from darkness or rain, mm-hmm. you know, we know that on, say, Sunday at 4:45, the thunderstorms roll in.
Yeah, and they've done that.
Yeah, you call and you say, guess what? We got a tie tonight, boys. Sorry. Sorry, Niklas, you have to split that hat with somebody. You know, just these are situations that we will figure out. And I'm sure we're going to run into problems. But
the problem is, and to cut you off, the problem is when we figure them out, it may be quote unquote too late, because it's going to piss off and disappoint somebody.
There will.
Right? It's going to piss off exactly half
100%
of the fans.
There's going to be problems.
Because there won't be
We've said it from the beginning of the year to every, like, guess what? DGN comes out with a new platform. We said there's going to be problems. There were problems. The stats going from UDisc to PDGA Live. Guys, set your expectations. There's going to be problems. Every change you implement, there is a chance for there to be problems. If you can imagine the scenario, it will probably happen at some point.
Now,
I didn't expect Waco to get called from a worldwide pandemic, Terry.
See, I saw that one coming.
I didn't. That wasn't on my bingo card.
I was in Thailand 2 months earlier. I knew it was coming for us. In fact, I brought some of it over.
I was going to say,
as I was accused of. Absolutely flip over that coin.
Ace Run says playoffs have to be six or fewer holes, according to PDGA.
He believes. Aggregate playoffs? Because a playoff obviously could go 20 holes given the time.
Yes, aggregate.
But what can a max aggregate be set at? That's a good question that I genuinely just don't know the answer to. Now, I'll go ahead and flip the coin over and 100% agree with the logic of, hey, we've played 54 or 72 or 90 holes, and the title that they're vying for comes down to one throw on one hole that may or may not seem more favorable to a righty versus a lefty. So do I understand them? And do I conceptually kind of like the idea? Yeah, I do. Not going to lie. Like I like the idea and of my variation would be worlds and majors, which could still suffer all the problems I just discussed. Obviously they could still fall fate to those things. Worlds and majors is where I would like to see them implemented. If you want to make an argument for the already long Disc Golf Pro Tour playoff or four plus events, four round, whatever. Don't even get me started there. But anyway, worlds and majors, I absolutely could get on board with this. A three round event.
I'm okay. I can totally buy that with you. I think right now we have the option between good and better. Good is a one hole playoff. That's good. I have no problem, you know, on these three round events, having a one hole playoff. Better is having the aggregate. If you can't get the aggregate or you don't want to implement the aggregate, I'm okay with that. Like I do. I'm with you. I think it would be cool to have maybe a set standard, so to speak, that says maybe you're right. DGBT plus DGBT playoff and majors. I would be fine with that. To have the aggregate playoff stuff there. I mean, it's just different styles, different strokes for different folks, right?
Yeah. So it was interesting to see. Now, let's keep in mind there are considerations here as to when they can be implemented. Who can implement them? Does the Pro Tour have a say and or state some standing in this?
The Pro Tour has some saying in everything.
But my point is, what you necessarily see at an elite or a major or a Pro Tour may or may not apply to you locally, or it might. Like these are all things that have to, I think, be taken into consideration, as you and I know. I mean, when so many of these things happen at a high level at our event's highest level, you know, whether it's an elite series or a major or whatever, I'll go all the way back to the rope of the USDGC. That clearly started
a trend.
A trend that got applied very accurately and very piss poorly for the next 20 years and still to this day.
Down to B tier, C tiers.
That's my point. So that's why I say
let's
tread cautiously.
Oh no, Terry.
With implementation here.
I want
a deuce or die course.
Yep.
And we won't go to sudden death. We'll just have them
Six hole aggregate. That's what I want.
So they can both be six down after six holes.
No, it's actually at the quarry this year.
Oh, that's true. That's another story.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing. But ultimately, I think maybe this does play into maybe pushing for more cuts to help space out
That doesn't help the actual playoff scenarios. I mean, it helps not conflict in terms of the
MPO FPO, correct?
But yeah, it doesn't answer the actual playoff itself because they're on the other end of the cut. But
a cut would help with a lot of these aspects. It would help with having daylight because you could push up tee times, so you're less worried about daylight running out, especially earlier in the season when we have less sunlight. It also helps maybe with the interrupting of the other events or the other division. You will still get that no matter what, because it's not like there is, you know, it's not like the lead card or the last card of MPO waits until the FPO is done. They're going to tee off probably a half hour after the last card. There's still going to be some interruption, but I think the spacing will help out quite a bit, and that maybe you can squeeze them between, you know, if the FPO have to wait on a hole because the MPO are finishing, not usually the case, but someone's probably going to get held up somewhere with something like that. Not ideal, but not horrible. That's what I have to say.
Well, I again, you kind of, in my opinion, you kill two birds with one stone if you say this only happens, the aggregate only happens at Elite Series or Majors, of which are four or five rounds, of which you're always cutting out, you're making a cut in the field.
And usually
for that final round anyway, like we're taking like two or three potential problems and solving them all at once by having that consistent format, right? Mm-hmm. If it's four rounds, there's a cut after three. And if you so choose, you can have an aggregate playoff. If there's five rounds, same thing applies, blah, 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 blah. This isn't that difficult. No. It actually kind of lines up perfectly if you think about it. So
sure.
Anyway, spoiler alert. We're going to for sure see one more aggregate playoff on the Pro Tour this year.
MVP. Steve wants it. He's the one that pushed for it in the first place.
And
I did call an MVP. I'm proud of myself.
I would be okay. As much as some of the most exciting golf on the planet starts with a sudden death playoff for Worlds, I would still be okay with it. I would love to see it actually implemented at Worlds. I think that is
that's
very appropriate. And I know people could say, is it the PGA Championship where if there's a tie after 18, they play a whole nother round on
the
Sunday?
Next day. Like, let's make them play Sunday again. It's a glow round.
No,
I think you're right.
Yeah, like, whatever it is. Anyway,
right, we're going to talk now. We're going to move on from aggregate. We're going to talk everybody else's favorite subject, footfall
ratings.
Oh, no, that's we Brody is on the board. We talked about that last week.
But I've got
no, I got more to say. No, we're going to talk footfalls, you know. The final playoff hole, Haley King is down by two strokes. Missy Gannon, he lines up, throws it over the island, or not over the water, to the island green.
Mm-hmm.
Haley King calls her on a foot fault, pulls her aside, talks to the official, says, hey, looks like she stepped on her mini or her disc or whatever was down there. You could even see her hand saying, like, it looked like it popped up.
Sure.
The official on the course, because there's only two of them on the card, there's not enough people to second it, so to speak, unless Missy had seconded it probably herself. The official, which I believe was Christine Jennings, which was there, more or less, dismissed it is the wrong word because that makes it feel like it was like not taken in consideration, but more or less overruled the ruling and says, I didn't see it. I don't believe it happened. We're going to move on. I believe that's kind of how it went. Ultimately, it wouldn't, in theory, have mattered, but Haley did call her on it. And I know there's, unfortunately, bad blowback on this footfall call. We have such a funny discrepancy that we all want players to call other players on time violations and footfalls and jump putts and step putts and falling, but all these things. But then when a player does it,
oh, you're such a bad sport.
What a poor sport. You had no chance of winning. You're calling or hoping something happened. Like, no, that's not. I mean, in general, here's what I think. I think Haley did the right thing. I think Haley made what she thought was the right call. She should have called her if she felt like she stepped on the disc. And she should get no blowback from this. And I understand you're down by two. It doesn't matter. No, but we want the rules are the rules, whether it's the first hole or the 57th or 58th hole, 59th hole, whatever hole number they were on.
57th. You had it right.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah. So
I agree with the idea of if we're going to get upset and frustrated and mad that our players aren't calling things that are seemingly so obvious, especially to the viewers at home, but they're not calling things. And then when they do, to especially if it's, so to speak, obvious, we should always want to uphold the rules at all times. if it's egregious or obvious to Haley, as maybe it was, I personally didn't see any of it. But if it's egregious or obvious and she just simply wants to call it, I don't know why people would be so upset in thinking that it's poor sportsmanship or that it's BS or it's Bush League or whatever thing you want to attach to it. I just personally did, because we, like you just said, we can't have it both ways. You can't scream and argue and complain and yell at the TV and post on all your socials about how we're not correctly calling things and this is BS that this wasn't called. But then when something does get called, if called appropriately, is a problem. Like, but that, mm-hmm. that version is, and I understand the optics, but I don't know why. And here's what I think is maybe even more interesting. Another layer to this story.
Ooh, layers.
Is the day before there were 3 foot faults called on the chase card. 3 in one group.
That's great.
It was really great.
It feels like on FPO, you're saying?
Yes.
It feels like FPO is more prone to call others on faults than MPO is. You just never see it. Now, you could say maybe there's more happening on FPO and less on MPO, but I find that hard to believe.
Probably not.
They're all skilled athletes.
Yeah. During round 2 on the chase card on hole 9, the very difficult hole 9, I'll probably screw this up because it's just from memory, but it was, who did it first? Okay. Natalie Ryan foot faulted, and I believe it was Stacy Ronsley that called her. And I think Natalie said, oh, Ace runs on the board. He'll remember. Natalie foot faulted and Stacy, I believe, called it. And then Natalie like seconded or agreed, said, okay. Yeah. I don't think it was the next throw, but it was within the next couple of throws. Stacy throws on her approach. She foot faults and somebody, Natalie or somebody else on the card, called it. And Stacy's like, yeah, I foot faulted. Like, they just happen to have very close together foot faults within a very short proximity of time.
Ace Run says it was Natalie, then Stacy. And then Natalie again on 18.
And then, yeah, so that all happened on 9.
Get your footwork together, ladies.
The vibe was great. Like, they were, it was so, in my opinion, from what I saw of it, it was so matter of fact. Like, I foot faulted. You saw that and called it. I agree. We move on. Like, that's how it was handled in both of those scenarios. Then you fast forward 9 holes later, and I'm standing there waiting for them to throw onto the island. And I'm standing back just a little bit, but all of a sudden I'm standing actually really close to the water's edge. I see Natalie throwing and Natalie goes down like wipes out after her throw.
Probably steps on her disc maybe and slips her on.
Who
knows? Her
mini. I don't know exactly how it happened, but apparently. But then as I look over after I see that, I see Natalie giving a knuckles to Stacy. And only a minute later did I find out Stacy had called her, I think, again on the foot fault. And Natalie was good with it because Natalie foot faulted.
What was the weather like?
It was fine.
Okay. I didn't know if that was rainy or where I could understand someone slipping. No,
if I recall, it was perfectly fine at that time.
Okay. They seconded themselves. And I mean, it's great. Honestly, it's I love to see it.
And that's an instant stroke.
Exactly. Like, that's why I said ultimately. Even if the foot fault happened, if you know, and again, I only watched it on the live replay, so I didn't, it was tough to see. I'd have to go back and watch it on the Jomez where they've got, you know, you're able to see with higher camera. It looked to me like Missy threw the disc, her foot came through and maybe hit the mini or disc as it came through, bang, bang. I could understand how maybe if you saw that, it looked like she stepped down there, it came up. I don't question Haley on that in the slightest. But even if it was called, it makes no difference. Missy parked that. She had a drop in.
Sure. But that's not to say she shouldn't have called it if that's
correct.
What she felt
happened. Correct. 100%. What I'm saying is that it would not have mattered because even with the one stroke, Missy drops it in the bucket. Wins only by one stroke then instead. Mm-hmm. It's not like she would have had to rethrow. It's not like, you know, she was trying to. In previous years, you would have got, I believe you would have got a warning first.
One warning first.
And then we would have gone to a rethrow
stroke, and
after
you have to rethrow.
Correct. But now that's not the case. Now it's just an immediate stroke if it's seconded and you keep the throw. So I don't know if Haley knew what the score was. I don't think it mattered to Haley. She wasn't trying to like work anybody from what I could tell. Because if she was, she did a piss poor job at it. And it's not, it just doesn't feel like a Haley. It's, she doesn't have a reputation for this. It doesn't feel like it's anything she's done in the past. I'm good with what Haley did. And I think she made what she thought was the right call. And Christine Jennings made what she thought was the right call. Missy took it like, okay, yeah, no, I'm good. Whatever. There didn't seem like there was any animosity after Haley tapped in, or after Missy tapped in. Haley came over and, you know, congratulated her. Didn't seem like any bad blood. But again, in the internet world, you know, there are people who are calling Missy a cheater. People are calling Haley poor sport and all these other things. Poor sport. I keep thinking like sport, poor sport. It's so difficult because this, as we've said for years, the camera, it lies. It literally lies. There are things that you think you see that you don't. We were talking obviously with Emily earlier, and camera angles, camera distances. There are so many times when I'm looking at the camera shots of two cameras, one pointed towards the player and one pointed to the side of the player. And I will specifically take the one that's pointed to the side of the player a lot of times because I think it shows the distance better. It's so tricky when the basket is in front and you see the player and it looks like, ah, it's like a 15 footer. When you get to the side, you're like, holy crap, that's like 35 feet. It's such a different, those camera lenses, they lie. And I blame Ace Run for it.
So, as well. I mean, you see how much weight they add to me when I'm out there?
I do.
Yeah, it's like,
that's a special lens filter.
I'm 100 pounds less than you guys see on camera, I swear.
So that's my take on the whole Haley King, Missy Gannon.
Well, to wrap that up, I'll say, I don't feel like anyone in the field was, from what I saw, was being catty or was being, manipulative or being unsportsmanlike. In fact, I saw quite the opposite, and there happened to be some calls this weekend, and I for one love that they're called, and from everything I could tell, everything seemed copacetic after that. And that's how we wish all of those scenarios. Now, some of them are going to hurt. They're going to hurt your score. They're going to hurt your pocketbook. They momentarily may feel like they hurt you personally in some minor way or major, whatever, but from what I saw this weekend, the times when those scenarios played out in front of me, I was very, I'll say, impressed with how I watched them unfold. So let's face it. Like, I think that then this goes to the Emily OB situation. This goes to these multiple foot fault scenarios. We can't keep screaming that we want players to play by the rules. And then when rules are called and infractions are noted, then we scream that that's not fair or right that someone's calling them out or saying, well, if that's called out, why wasn't that? I don't know. We got to start somewhere. Like if there were 100 infractions this weekend and 4 got called out, then hopefully next weekend when there's 100, 10 get called out or whatever. Like they've got to happen. They got to get called one way or another. In theory, just to answer, to tie this all together, especially in a playoff scenario, because there are typically just two players, yes, there should be a tournament director and or certified official that is along with the card. As you were saying, it was in this case, Christine Jennings, whomever it might be, there should in fact be a player along because obviously, you know, there could be one person thinking you're out of bounds, one person thinking you're in, or other scenarios or foot faults or things that could get called that may, that would be looking for a third person.
Which is so funny because in your average B or C tier, so many times if two people come in at a tie, I've seen you do this. A lot of people like, okay, you guys go play it off. And there's just two of them. And they go and they wander off and they play it off. And 99.9% of the time they come back and Joe Schmo won and he's happy. And the other guy was like, ah, well, whatever. Imagine that scenario now with this type of call where you don't, Terry, you don't go walk with them because you're the official.
I always do, but yeah. I send out officials with them.
Okay. So, but imagine someone who doesn't or hasn't in the past where you just, that's what happens. And now suddenly there's a dispute. No, I said he foot folded. I said he didn't. There was nobody else there. I could see a scenario like that at your average C tier or something along those lines happening where maybe the TD doesn't have the resources because you're dealing with payouts and other divisions and things like that. And these guys just, you know, your MA40s just wander off to go play it off. But
Earl says self-policing is tough, can mentally affect the person calling it as well. Of course. And right now this is where our game is at. And in a bigger perspective too, you could have had somebody, we'll say, on the Emily call, and they could have still agreed with the group, with the others within the group, or they could have been on, saw it Emily's way or whatever the case might be. You're still putting all that onto the onus of one person. And how interesting would that have been if an official came in and let's just say they made the same call of her being OB. And then I would just love to see what the internet then says, you know, there should be an official on every card. There was. Here's the call they made. But I saw it from my couch with 9 pixels.
Oh, the internet voice came out.
Yeah. So, all right. We're going to move on from all that. But an exciting weekend. And to wrap up all of DDO, Dynamic Disc Open, you have to talk about Champions Landing and the efforts and the work that
we're likely going to
see from Jeremy Rusko.
Oh, geez.
I believe some renderings were ultimately put on screen because that's what I could tell from the context in which I was simply just listening to Germ and Nate to Germ and Ian or Ian and Sarah, is that the renderings were available and or put on screen. Insane. And I feel like that could be a whole nother conversation for another day, but yeah, golf stuff, increased pickleball stuff, media considerations, up to 100 room hotel, put there, parking for up to like 400 parking spaces, a dual level parking lot when you pull into there. Insane. It looks absolutely incredible for what he's hoping to then turn that into. And I think that is teetering or is in the, comes down to some form of grant and or other assistance, potentially from the city and or state. So I'm not going to say that's the end all be all, but I think that plays a large role and factor into some of those things developing to the degree in which he's hoping to take it.
And it's funny because you hear all these people online that just don't like watching Champions Landing course. They don't like the old DDO course. They don't like, you know, because it's flat, boring, blah, 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 all these things. And all the speculation of, you know, is DDO going to leave the tour because, you know, people don't like it? Or look at the players who didn't, look at all the Europeans who didn't come play it because they don't like the course, which is not the case. It was just convenient for them to go home to play these events and things like that. I find it funny to think that if Rusko were to get something like that taken care of, you can almost guarantee DDO on the tour for the next 10 years, period. I mean, you can like it or not. That's what would make sense. And I know there was talks and complaints about spectators and the numbers and a lot of other things, but whatever Rusko is trying to accomplish out there could be huge. Just literally huge for the sport.
Well, and you think about the other things in which Dynamic Disc and then also Champions Landing can continue to host. We've had the Junior Worlds awarded there now multiple times. We've had AM Worlds there. We've had Pro Worlds there. We've had in 5 weeks, we're going to have the Pro and AM Masters Worlds there in Emporia, all of which at some point are going to likely be integrated with the Champions Landing property as well. So you think about it from all that perspective, you think the amphitheater, sound stages, along with then, you know, pickleball and some of those other sports and integration, like it is pretty insane and expansive as to what that will all entail if it in fact rolls out and plays out in that way. So
I want to ask your opinion about hole 18. That was the most significant change we saw out at Champions Landing. EMAC took it and moved it from the traditional spot across the water. Did you like the hole? Did you like the change?
Like everything, I think there's pros and cons to it. And to be clear, I don't think that was an EMAC decision.
Really? Because I thought I saw Emac post on social media that he designed or he had this.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't believe, if I recall.
Maybe he just posted the change.
Yes.
Okay.
If I recall, I think that was more more driven by Jeremy Rusko himself, actually.
Oh, okay.
Although Emac obviously has been your main course designer in that area and has done a ton of things, including on that property. I believe that was a more recent change, and if I understand correctly, and I could be absolutely wrong here, but if I understand it correctly, that was more of a push from Jeremy in a more recent capacity.
Okay.
There was talks about it a year ago.
Yeah.
And all sorts of things. And then even there's a conversation to be had about the huge boulders or bricks that are there, so to speak, as opposed to any other backdrop.
I liked the look of the island personally.
It looks great, but... Could you argue? What if it was just regular string? What if it was or paint? What if it was hay bales? What if it was any other kind of item? Like, it's kind of, to me, it's unique in the sense. Well, it's kind of unique almost in the sense of 16. Like, that's a very rigid official backstop.
I like it. The only thing
which some people may really dislike, and I can understand that
they're wrong, but that's okay. I like the rocks. I think the only thing that might be quote unquote better would be a matching fence to what we see on 16, just for consistency sake.
Sure.
Like, hey, let's build a fence that looks just like 16 now, or maybe get more of those rocks and put them on 16 and try to sink the island. I don't know. But I think it could be kind of cool for consistency sake, but I'm not complaining about either one. I liked the aesthetic of it. I don't like the idea of, I honestly, I like the backstop idea.
Personally. All right. I can understand if somebody doesn't, though. I mean, you're throwing hard to try and get onto a specific space and island. And as long as you throw it hard enough, like, I personally didn't see. No, I think I saw one. I was going to say one that came into the island that then got up and skipped over the rocks.
Oh, I didn't. I personally
any
didn't
shot that I saw either didn't hit the rocks or they skipped and hit the rock and stayed in. And that almost feels like it adds, I don't want to say an element of ease to it, but I feel like you're getting away with more skips than maybe in a lot of other OB situations where they're trying to have OB in play. You're getting away with it a little easier.
I really like the fact that there's an opportunity for an eagle on it, that if you play to the right spot, you can get an eagle.
I do too.
I don't love the fact that it feels like if you don't go for eagle, it's almost it's such a quote unquote easy birdie. Like, it just, there's almost no decision to be made if you don't make that, if you don't put in the eagle. You lay it up, you throw it up, you drop it in.
Sure.
Like,
it should be. I agree.
And we saw
people plunk one in the middle of the water that you shouldn't.
Correct. We've seen people screw it up, or you throw it and it's too far right and you can't hit the putt and you take a par. I wish there was a better approach. I wish there was a better second shot if you're not going for eagle. It just feels like I watched so many of those people just, all right, here's a 250 foot layup now. And like, you laid up to as close to the edge as you can or within 50 feet. And every one of those MPL players can get over from there. I just feel like it's a little bit blah on the second shot.
I can see that, but where I think it makes up for it, and something that I think was maybe didn't come through on camera as much as it does in person, is the elevated pin with the slope at the green.
Yeah.
Means very few putts are safe. And we watched a lot of people in front of the gallery.
Austin Turner.
We watched a lot of people, and not just to pick on him, but watched a lot of people get to that green and then still struggle, because if you miss on that elevated basket, you probably have a putt of substance following that. And that is one thing that I think makes up I'll concede the fact that, the second shot should be relatively easy to set yourself up. I get that. But once you do get to the green, it's not a given.
No, I agree with that.
Parked.
I do agree with that. There's just something to me, like I said, just something a little blah about that second shot. But if you had a chance somehow to make it over on the second shot or maybe not make it over on the second shot, but if the second shot was somehow a little bit more dangerous rather than just the little pitch up they have. And I don't know how you do that. There's all sorts of, I'm sure there's things that you could think of, but anyway, it's the first year for the hole.
Yep.
Overall, I liked it. I don't have really, I don't know if I like it more or less than the old hole four or the old hole 18 for the par four. I mean, it's just, it'll grow on me like a lot of other changes.
Yeah, personally,
a lot of people hated the backstop on 16 when it was first put up, when it was just an island. And now I don't understand why more players don't hit that backstop.
Neither do I. But that's... All right. So what we're going to do now, because he can't stay away from us and it's been a minute, we're going to have Kelvin Heimberg. And I'm thinking let's shut this down and have him officially ERG. ERG? Yeah. Let's have him officially headline. And I already told him we won't keep him too long tonight, but let's have him open our after show. Does that sound like a good idea to you?
That sounds great. That's a great idea.
Let's do that. I've got so many great ideas.
Do you? You usually don't.
I do tonight. Well, so with that, we're going to officially close out this show. What all that really means is we're going to take a quick break. We're going to stand down. We're going to recognize a few of our supporters. We appreciate you for being Patreon supporters and then some of our show. We'll take a very quick two-ish minute break. We'll get Kelvin Heimberg hopefully all lined up and ready to go. And then we'll come back. We'll have him open the after show. We'll chit-chat with him for just a little bit. And then we'll get to the other after show stuff, which is may or may not be disc golf related, but it'd be good to hear from... you know, the guy that took him a year to win. Jeez.
Over a year. It was 370 days.
I mean, he needs to go through the routine. You win, you're here. Even if it takes him that long. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Huge, huge thanks to Emily. Congratulations to her for her performance. Also, of course, congratulations to your FPO champion in dramatic fashion. That's Missy Gannon picking up another big win here in 2024. Big money Missy is finding a way to get it done. It's awesome to see. So congrats to her. When we come back, we're going to have our champion from the MPO side. That's Kelvin Heimberg. So for Emily for joining us earlier, Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. That's Smashbox TV Podcast 505. Don't go too far. We'll see you when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.